And now, a special word from our sponsors.
Hey, Bubba. What you looking so mad over there for?
I'll fix it to tell you. You see that little blinking light on that there computer screen?
Yeah, so what?
Well, the way I see it, that little light, actually a camera. I think the government watches everything I do. I think they're using that interweb to spy on me.
Man, that sounds plumb crazy. What the heck are you drinking over there? Is that some of Miss Ella's lemonade?
No, that ain't no lemonade. My friend JJ out there driving truck, he done found this stuff on the AM radio. It's called Conspiracy. It don't taste no good at all, but it opened up my mind. I can see things clear now.
What? What you talking about? Give me a little taste of that.
Ooh, man, that's a little bit bitter. But wait, I'm feeling something. Yeah, I think that government is spying on you.
I see that, they're looking right through that little light right there.
Yeah, that's what I was telling you. You know what else? I think 9/11 was an inside job.
That's right.
And they done stole that election from Trump.
Conspiracy. Because sometimes, even drinking the Kool-Aid ain't enough. And now back to the dark side.
Because, hey, last year, before all these Nazi policies, there was only 20 or 25 jobs that a guy with these kind of degrees could really apply for. But this year, everybody who had one of those jobs and was Jewish is gone. So now there's okay. 200 openings.
Yeah.
So again, it's another, I mean, if he wanted to be successful, I mean, if he went out of his way to pick this field, he picked perfect.
Yeah.
And if he didn't pick it with this kind of, you know, foresight in mind, then, man, he's got the best luck in history, which is going to be really unfortunate because we're headed for the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that happens with Mengele, which is very, very different than most other people, he's going to go into the military. He's going to go into the army. Okay, so he's getting out of academia. He's going into the army. If you went into the army today and you were already a doctor, how's that different than if you went into the army today and you're just Jacob or Jared or something?
I assume you go in with like a higher rank or something if you already have schooling, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so he's going to go in as an officer right off the bat. He's okay. In charge, which pays more. It has more prestige. He's going to get, you know, those officer uniforms, which he can keep looking delightfully perfect because that's his thing.
Uh-huh.
So that does, in fact, happen. Now, the worst place to go in the entire war is the Eastern Front. In 1941, the Germans attack Russia. And that whole first almost year is just balls out total domination. Like, it seems like Germany's just going to go all the way to doggone Siberia. They are just rolling the Ruskies. It's not even close.
Uh-huh.
So that's great, right? But after that first winter, because who's the best general in all of Russian history?
I have no idea.
General Winter, right? Winter beat Napoleon. Winter beat Hitler. You can't attack Russia in the dang winter. It's too dang cold. Nothing works.
That makes sense.
And so they don't get Moscow. They don't get their major objectives. They get close, though, before winter sets in. And as soon as winter sets in, you know, on paper, if you're playing Risk, if you're playing Axis and Allies, it still looks like Germany could win. But it's done. Like, once they didn't get it done that first winter, I mean, Stalin's got all winter to move troops up from Siberia who are not happy, you know? Like, and it changes the whole tide of the war. So The Eastern Front's a bad place to be later, but at the beginning of the war, when Mengele's in, it's a great place to be. He gets assigned to some of the units where he's going to see, in the Ukraine in particular, some of these movements to kill off the Jews. Okay? In Europe, people get put into ghettos and people get moved to concentration camps and all those things go on. When the Russian territory is invaded, how the Jews are dealt with is very different. Do you know anything about that?
None at all.
Okay. As the frontline troops would go through, they would have units come behind them and just round up the Jews and, you know, line them up in front of ditches and shoot them. They're just killing everybody outright. We're not beating around the bush. We're not sending nobody to a factory. Line them up in front of a ditch, kill them off. And
Okay. There's
a history in Russia of pogroms, of these attacks now and again against Judaism. So sometimes in those areas, and I don't mean just Russia proper, but in Ukraine or in Poland or in all these different places, like the citizenry is like, oh, we hate the Jews again. It is about time. We'll help you out. You know, we don't even need the Nazis to get here. They're on the way. Let's kill us some Jews and steal all their stuff. It's not supremely uncommon. So
yeah.
The Jews have a hard historical time in Europe and in Russia anyway.
Okay.
While Mengele is over there, and he's an officer, and he's, you know, he's a medical officer, but he gets injured. He gets injured like saving some guys that were trapped in a tank or something, and he pulls them out.
Oh, man. He
gets the equivalent of the Purple Heart, you know, for being injured in battle.
He must feel so good about that.
Well, this is a symbol, right? Because when he deals with these other doctors later on, none of them got that medal. They didn't get hurt. Doctors aren't at the front pulling people out of tanks. That's not a thing.
That's true.
But in addition to this award, you know, for being injured, he gets an award for bravery, too. So he gets the Iron Cross second class and later on the Iron Cross first class. That's the same awards that Hitler got in World War I. So now he's got these awards on his uniform that are reserved for heroic people like Adolf Hitler, who's your ultimate guru guy. If you're trying to be successful, you're going to want to, unfortunately, be like that dude a little bit, right?
Yep.
And if you're German at that time. And so So there we go. It's like another perfect storm. What could he do? Already a successful doctor, already well-degreed, already well thought of academically, to make his stock rise even higher? Well, let's get some medals for bravery and getting injured on the Eastern Front.
Man, yeah, his resume is looking really good for him right
Absolutely
now.
Absolutely delightful.
As far as the Nazis go.
Yeah, he's top shelf. And nothing could be better for his career than he got injured. And so they had to send him back to, you know, Germany to recover. He gets out of the Eastern Front. And that's wonderful news, because what happens to everybody who goes to the Eastern Front after that first year?
General Winter?
Yeah, and then the Russians spend 3 years killing them all. Like, that early onslaught by the Germans, it takes a little while longer, but the Russians steamroll. And if you get sent to the Eastern Front anytime after that first offensive, it's a death sentence, basically.
Holy cow.
Because they can't win, but Hitler won't stop. So he's just sending troops to their death, not letting his commanders retreat, not even tactically. You're just going to go out there and fight for every last foot of ground and die doing it, and that's the plan. So that's a horrible place to go. But what kind of street cred do you get in the rest of the German Empire when you're like, oh, I got hurt and I got these awards for valor while I was a doctor on the Eastern Front?
Yep, that's a lot of street cred.
Yeah, he's the man. He's like the Biggie or the Tupac of Nazi medicine or something. So he ends up getting this assignment after he's injured because whatever with his recovery, he can't go back frontline forces. So they're going to keep him out of there. And rather than just die a bureaucrat in Berlin, and there's a lot of people who did, you know, a lot of bureaucratic people that are in the Nazi hierarchy that are just staying in Germany. And, you know, they're well thought of, they're taken care of, but they're not hands-on anymore, right? So he gets sent to Auschwitz. And it's the perfect storm for this guy. Absolutely perfect in the worst ways possible. Because he does have a lot of interest in experimentation. You know, we know him for the twin thing. We base a lot of what we hear about what happened with his experiments on the testimony of like dozens of Hungarian Jews that talk about what had happened over time. Now, he's there a lot longer than that, but we're really only getting the eyewitness testimony, at least as far as victims go, from maybe like dozens out of hundreds of thousands of people who went through Auschwitz while he was there. We've only got the live testimony of, you know, maybe a couple, two or three dozen people. Why do you suppose that is? And they're all Hungarian Jews for the most part. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, given that Auschwitz is a death factory,
right?
They're probably dead.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason they're all Hungarian is because that's the last group of Jews to go there before the camp gets liberated.
If it were a business, they are profitable.
Everybody else who went before them and got experimented on or got dealt with in any way by Dr. Mengele, they're gone.
Uh-huh.
There's no retirement plan if you're a prisoner at Auschwitz, right?
It's true.
So there's very few people left to give eyewitness accounts other than some of the Germans that are there. A lot of them live, unfortunately, right?
Okay,
while he's there, he's assigned to the selection. So do you know what the selection is at Auschwitz?
That's where they like line everybody up and he goes through and seemingly arbitrarily picks who gets to live and who goes to the gas chamber, right?
Yes. And if you get chosen to live, you're still going to get worked to death. So the choice is you're going to die right now today, or we're going to work you over at, you know, Birkenau Camp 3 for, you know, a few weeks or a few months, and then you'll die over there. Either way, you're going up the chimney at some point, but it's the difference of who's going to die right this second and who's not. Now, who's on this automatic list that you're going right to the gas chambers? What types of people are not going to get to even have an option?
It's like old people and sick people, right?
Yeah, you're gone. We have no use for you if you're old or sick. What else?
I don't know. Probably anybody with any kind of handicap or I guess that kind of counts as sick.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Really young people.
Who else?
They're not the best workers. It's not like a snow piercer, so I don't need little kids working on my mystical ice train.
That's true. They don't know nothing. They know how to work.
So they're gone right away.
Mm-hmm.
And the one big exception in Auschwitz, while Mengele is there, and he loves doing these selections, right? This is part of how the Germans made the medical industry give credibility to doing what they're doing. Well, a doctor's picking who's going where, so it's somehow morally okay.
Yeah.
It's all part of their bullcrap. So he gets to pick the people he wants for anything he wants to do.
Okay.
All right. So you talked about twins. Definitely. He's running around and he's got other Nazi people that are part of the selection yelling for twins. If you're a twin, guess what? You're going to live.
You live.
For a while.
Okay.
And there's certain diseases or handicaps that if he recognizes, he wants those too, because he can do experiments with them.
Okay.
So he is on the lookout for certain things. Now, if you're the Hungarian Jew walking off a train you've been in for 4 days and some Germans are yelling stuff in German at you while there's thousands of people milling around, I mean, you don't know what's good or bad, right?
No idea.
And ultimately, it's all bad because you're all dying. It's just a matter of whether you're going to die right now or we're going to do weird things to you first.
Yeah.
So it's one of those weird little things. Like, some people could argue that some lives were saved by Dr. Mengele. You know, these people who were testifying to what he did, these Hungarian Jews who were parts of the experiments, they would have been dead if he didn't pick them. But that doesn't mean that he's a life giver per se, right?
Yeah.
Like, the reason they're not dead is because the Russians...
he doesn't pick is getting sent over to the gas chamber anyway.
Right. So it's hard for me to get behind the, oh, well, maybe he saved lives or made some lives better. So he's in his perfect, immaculate uniform. He's part of the SS, which the SS dealt with all the extermination of the Jews. It's an elite branch. They're the ones with the black uniforms and the little death heads insignia that you see in the movies. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, it makes sense he'd want to be there because it's looked up to within the military. Fun fact, all of those guys that were in the SS, you know how, what do, like, Delta, you know, Delta Force or Navy SEALs, what do they do before they go on a combat mission to help them out in case they get hurt? If you remember, like, Black Hawk Down, they do this. If you remember that movie.
I think I've only seen Black Hawk Down, like, once.
Okay, well, that's a sin right there, dude. That's my favorite war movie ever, bro.
All right. Well, I'll watch it as soon as we're done here.
Thank you.
I don't know. What do they do?
So they'll write their blood type, and they'll put it on their shoelaces or their boots or their so patch.
If they get injured, then somebody with the same blood type can
help
them out.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so the SS did this. Now, regular German troops and the regular army did not. But the SS would get tattoos of their blood type underneath their right arm. Like if you lifted your right arm up kind of under your armpit, they would get a tattoo of their blood type, which is smart if you're thinking in terms of, hey, you know, you might need this to stay alive. It's ironic to me that the people that are known for tattooing the Jews have tattooed themselves.
Tattooed.
They're tattooing themselves to, you know, preserve their life. And obviously it's a little different situation for the Jews, but tattoos all the way around. But guess who does not ever get a tattoo?
Our boy?
Yeah, our boy Mengele does not ever do it. He's in charge of it, of making sure that other SS people under him get their tattoo when they you know, start. But he never does. Basically, it's kind of a vanity thing, everybody thinks. He just didn't want to mess up his body or whatever. No tattoos for Mengele. That'll matter a lot at the end of the war, but just a weird little quirk of having the right thing going on. Oh, looky here. The princess wants to come say hi. She just got home. So.
Oh, snap.
So we're going to take a short departure so that she can come say hi. And she probably wants to say hi to you, which is going to be weird because you're on my headphones, and I don't think that's going to work. Katie! Hi. Say hi to your brother. Jacob's on the phone.
Hi, Jacob.
Katie Bell.
I miss you.
I miss you too.
I love you.
I love you too. How was school?
She went to school. She's at work.
Whatever you did.
Yeah, I was at work.
How was it?
Well, this is where we're going to have another quick plug. So for all your fine dining needs, make sure that you get the best steak in town by going to the Texas Roadhouse. Any further plug action there, Katie?
Nope. I've had enough Texas. No, work was good.
All right.
Fantastic.
Okay, well, yeah.
Text me later.
Okay, I will.
Back to the Nazis. Love you, Katie.
Hey, Bubba.
Yes, Ahmad.
Bubba, today is return of Taliban Garage Sale. Yes. After many years, we are back with all of your favorite high-quality American goods on sale right now, very good prices.
Yes, the Taliban garage sale. You need Humvee, you need Black Hawk helicopter, we have those.
We have the M4s, we have the night vision, we have many, many weapons, we have uniform. Act now, there are many, many for sale.
We also have a huge sale on women's textbooks. They don't need no more. Come get your textbooks for women for school. Unless you are local, you do not need to come. If you do come, wear burqa. Bring an escort. All of these items are your gain because they were our bonus when our Uncle Joe left and went away. He leave us these many gifts and presents. You can take advantage now. Great sale. Don't forget, everything you need to do whatever it is you want to do, you can get now at Taliban Garage Sale!
Oh, the joys of running a podcast from your bedroom. Okay, so what were you talking about?
So
he never got tattooed?
Tattoo, yeah.
But he's immaculate. His uniform is perfect. A lot of these medical people that are in places like Auschwitz, okay, they are best known for heavy drinking and being psychologically broken. Like, they go about their duties. They know what's going on. They're sending people to their death. They're surrounded by death. It smells like death all the time. They're just trying to get through the day until they can get somewhere else. But Mengele's in his perfect uniform, and it's all creased and beautiful. And lots of people said he would be whistling as he went out to do his selection. You had to do, in his position, so many selections. There was like a rotation, right?
Okay.
He was known to try and get to all of them. So what does that tell you about this guy?
And I mean, it sounds like he really, really enjoys his job.
Well, I don't know if he enjoyed his job so much as he really wanted his twins. So I think he wants his research people, and he doesn't trust the others who are having little mental hangups because they're got the worst job on earth.
The people that he's looking to do his research on.
Right. Now, when you get to Auschwitz and you're going to do this research, right, he's got kind of a blank check, but he can't just fill out his unit with doctors and nurses. If you're going to run a research laboratory in the medical field, you need a lot of people. You're not doing this yourself.
Yeah.
He can't get a lot of people because those people are in the war.
Yeah, makes sense.
But guess what people he can get to help him?
He can get any of the Jews who are already trained in all of this stuff.
And he does. Right? He does.
Oh my
goodness.
So he can just go through in selection and pick out all the people that are going to help him with research.
Yes, he can. And it's better for those people because their lives are, hey, they were definitely going to the ovens before.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're going to get fed better, and they're going to get housed better, and they're going to get to dress better, and they're going to get to, you know, maybe keep their hair and not wear the striped pajamas and all that. So their level of life is better. The one downfall is every transport of thousands of people probably has other people that do your job. So if you get out of line, you are expendable. So while it's a better short-term fix, it's no guarantee you're going to make it through the war. But I guess in that condition, if you're Jewish, anything that keeps you alive one more day is worth the risk. I mean, I don't know what else you do with that mess.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So he's out there selecting all of these people. And it's funny too, right? Because what's your whole philosophy of the Nazis? That the Jews are inferior, that the Jews are a menace, that the Jews are controlling, that the Aryans are better. And most of his research staff is going to be who?
The Jews.
The Jews. They're his experts. They're his helpers.
They can help him out.
Yeah. Now, a couple other oddities that go on in Auschwitz. In Germany proper, especially during the end of the war, there's still all of those medical colleges. There's still people going there. They're not coming from all over the world anymore. But, you know, Germany doesn't mysteriously instantly quit being the top level schooling. There's just less people from around the world going there during the war.
Yeah.
So these places, they have research laboratories and facilities back in Germany, too. And they've already removed kind of this, hey, you can't do these different kinds of experiments on people in theory. Theoretically, we've gone past that. But you still can't experiment on people in Germany proper, right?
Yeah.
But we can do those kinds of experiments in the camps in Poland, in places like Auschwitz.
Yeah.
So a lot of Mengele's former inspirational people, people that were his professors that he worked with that are also doing genetics, they put in kind of a wish list. Hey, you should do research on this, about people's eyes, or not only do I want you to do research, but we can do a lot of that research here in Germany. We just don't have the eyeballs. Any way you could get us, I don't know, 700 blue eyeballs or 300 eyeballs of people that have two different colored eyes.
Oh, my.
In the real world, you can't do that. You can't find those people, and you can't just rip their eyes out. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
But in this weird little created world in Auschwitz, all of that is available.
So now he's a top-shelf Nazi and Santa Claus.
Yeah, the grossest Santa Claus ever. Yeah, send me your wish list. I don't care if you're naughty or nice. I will send you what you're looking for. And he does. He's supplying these research facilities in Germany, these schools. You know, hey, do you need a skeleton? Well, if you do, and every medical place on Earth is going to need a skeleton for part of their anatomy class, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, there's about a three-year gap where you can own the market and flood the market because we have an abundance of skeletons. We have an abundance of eyeballs. We have an abundance of whatever you want. So that's gross.
Goodness.
And that's also one of the other ways, because at every step in the way of this killing of the Jews, there's money being made. There's dollar signs attached to it. It's a very capitalistic genocide. Gross. Thank you, capitalism. There's a lot I love about you, but I don't love that.
Okay.
So I don't know that he's particularly lining his pockets. Lots of people in Auschwitz broke the rules and stole the wealth that came in one way or another. And there was opportunities for him to make money on this. It doesn't seem like that was really his thing, though. He just wanted to be thought of as prestigious and cutting edge and a leader. And supplying this wish list to people of a similar academic standing or even people that were his teachers, his inspiration, that must have made him feel pretty good. All right, so let's talk about some of these actual experiments.
All right.
He does a lot of stuff with twins.
Okay.
Because he's studying hereditary, or heredity, he's not studying hereditary. He'll do whatever to a twin, right? And for the most part, one of those twins has to be the experimentee. The other one has to be the control. So we're going to apply the scientific method. And when you have twins that are genetically the same, or at least very, very similar, you know, identical twins are a home run for him. Then you have a built-in control. Not only are they the same genetically, but they were raised in the same house. They ate the same foods. It's a wonderful way to study, but at any other time or place on Earth, you couldn't do this.
Yeah.
Because when he does an experiment and one of the twins has a reaction or one of the twins that's being experimented on dies, guess what he does?
Checks the other one?
Yeah. He immediately kills the other one to check and see the differences.
Okay.
So if you were the twin that didn't get experimented on, you were still going to die the same time as your twin.
Yeah.
One of the peculiarities that drives people crazy with Dr. Mengele is he's very calm and he has a good demeanor with a lot of these twins that are children. He has them call him Uncle Joseph, and he's kind to them, and he gives them little treats, and he asks them about their day, and he really kind of makes a human connection in a very inhuman place. Mm-hmm. And this drives people crazy, because we want somebody who's going to do this to be the devil.
Yeah, we want them to be a monster.
We do.
And he's not.
Or maybe,
I mean, it sounds like he's really trying to preserve the psyche of these kids and keep that in the best state of mind that they can be, or at least like his relationship with them.
Right.
So that way when he goes and does these experiments, they're not tainted by the fact of their surroundings
right.
as much as, you know, as little as possible.
Yeah, they're going to be a little more willing participant, a little more trusting. It's going to make his life go a little easier, right?
Yeah.
And it seems like that's probably what this really is. I don't know that he had any genuine affection for these kids or not, because he could flip that on or off in a second. Mm-hmm. He could, you know, talk to you about your day and give you a treat and pat your head and then walk you over to the gas chamber and personally, you know, toss you in. Mm-hmm. Just, it seems like either he had this just uncanny ability to flip between these two lives or this kindness that he appeared to show people is just bullcrap and that's just a show. Neither is a great way to think about life, right? In both of those examples, he's still kind of a scarier monster than if he was just straight up obviously evil.
Yeah.
So this causes people a lot of concern, too, that they're trying to... I mean, he's a good-looking guy. He dresses perfect. He seems cheerful enough at times. He's kind to the kids occasionally when it's in his interest. And on the drop of a dime, he'll kill everybody, you know? Well, if there's a typhus outbreak in one of his special units in a secluded part of the camp, he'll just kill all the kids there, sterilize the rooms, and start over. So it's really hard to know what his motivation is, what his pathology is, right? Like, maybe he is like that serial killer that just has an absolute lack of empathy. The research, especially in Lipton's book, talks about how most of these leading Nazis were able to kind of live a double life. I think he calls it doubling. And flip into their Auschwitz mode when they were on duty and do those things. And then have a seemingly normal life afterwards, you know, and in between. So I don't know what the psychological part of that is for Dr. Mengele. But he has thousands of people go through in his unit. He saves, quote, saves, thousands of Jews from the gas chamber, but subjects them to all manner of experiments. Some of the stuff's like just gross, you know, like he'll remove somebody's heart and not give them any anesthesia before the surgery. Like, that's just crazy talk, right? All right, let me text the girl to turn down the TV. Because
I mean, from going back to how he kind of flips that switch from being nice to these kids to just, you know, throwing them into a chamber or whatever, it kind of seems, I don't know, it doesn't sound like doubling. Like, when you say doubling, like, I assume that that would mean, like, they kind of, they compartmentalize it. Oh, I live this life here at home, and then when I go to work, I act this way.
Right.
And there is, like, a differentiation. But from what we've talked about and everything, it doesn't quite sound the same, or it doesn't really sound like it fits what is going on with him. To me, it sounds like he's got like this level of cruelty that he kind of enjoys. He upholds like his scientific theory, and he doesn't want to do anything to tarnish that. His experiments are paramount. And so he needs to have this, you know, really good relationship with the people he's experimenting on. But then beyond his experiments, they don't mean anything to him. And beyond that, he can do whatever he wants. They are totally expendable.
And this is—it
sounds like that. It sounds like there's a level of cruelty there that he kind of enjoys himself. He knows that he can be nice to them 1 minute, and in 5 minutes from now, he's going to do them wrong. And like, I don't know. You have to see things from their perspective if you're going to be that nice to them. And so I can only imagine that he's also thinking about that later on when he does harm to them as well.
So I guess the question would be, and I don't know the answer to this, right? This is the enigma that is people like Dr. Mengele. Is he sadistic and he enjoys hurting these people at times? Or is it not so much the sadism? Is it he enjoys this feeling of power over life and death over them? I heard last night I was listening to one of the authors that wrote a book on him. And, you know, they asked this question. I hate this question. This is the worst question to have to answer. Were any of these experiments that Mengele did they provide anything that was actually scientifically useful? So that's a super loaded question with anything the Nazis did, right?
Yeah.
If you say yes, then you've, in a way, justified the Holocaust. And that's not going to make, it doesn't make me happy, right? I'm like, every little bit of research they did, just burn it because it's all tarnished.
Yeah.
And he talked about, and after he danced around, because you could tell he wasn't comfortable answering this question either, that there was one study with something to do with eyes that was published and referenced in some scientific journals in like 1946, 47. And that's the only part of his experimentation that seemed to have any real world connection to anything. Most of the stuff he was experimenting wasn't what we would consider real science anyway. He might have believed it, but it was never going to have an actual real-world, practical, grounded application. It was just this weird either Nazi fantasy or personal fantasy that his experimentation would have some value. Like, how did he justify to himself that there was this link to future value? Is the, and obviously we don't know because he's dead now, but there's so many things like that that are, they make you think and they make you question, but we don't know the answers to. So, yes, very good observation, Mr. I don't know much about him. Good job. Makes me happy. So he goes through, does this stuff. He's his own weird guy. He's well thought of because he's, you know, sending out his Christmas wish list and fulfilling these orders for different people. In his own mind, whether it's through sadism or this God complex, he's pretty happy with himself. He does seem to genuinely enjoy his assignment there in Auschwitz. Like, I think people would be happier if, well, he had killed his neighbor kid when he was 8, or he had been known to torture animals. Like, I think people want to find that in his past because of what he did in those years in Auschwitz. Like, somehow that's, like you said, making him a better monster. But, I mean, what's more evil than, oh, I'm just in this horrible place, let me do some horrible things, and then afterwards, no, I'm cool, I'll go back to life. Did you ever read the story or watch the movie Apt Pupil? It's a Stephen King short story.
No, I did not.
Okay, so Apt Pupil, and it's in the book Four Seasons, I believe. Another shameless plug. Politically, I'm no fan of Stephen King, but that dude can write. Anyway, so in this story, a guy just in the Midwest, a kid, a teenager, meets a guy that he finds out was an old Nazi prison guard at a concentration camp. And it turns out that this prison guard in his life in America as an old man goes around and he'll like get a cat and burn it in an oven. And it escalates, like he still has this inherent need to kill. And the kid ends up like learning and getting a taste of that. And now he wants to kill. You know, I think people like that because it makes more sense to them than here's just a guy who people like to see at a party and he dressed nice and he was kind of fun. And oh, yeah, and then he killed a whole bunch of people doing random horrible things. And then he went back to life. Like, that's so hard to wrap your head around.
Thank you for listening to Season 2 of History on the Dark Side. If you're enjoying this season, I highly recommend the following book, The Nazi Doctors by Robert J. Lifton. Not only is it valuable source material, but this is the definitive book on this subject matter. As far as documentaries go, I highly recommend Auschwitz, The Nazis and the Final Solution by the BBC. I don't think there's a better documentary about the Final Solution. I'd like to recommend iCivics. Now, this doesn't have much to do with the Nazis, but if you are a history teacher like myself, or you have a history class, or you're just interested in anything to do with American government or American history, there's a lot of materials at iCivics.com that you can use. And I also want to recommend the Anchor app. If you need to distribute or make a podcast, they make it pretty simple. Special thanks to a lot of people who helped this show happen. I'd like to thank my cohorts at Eagle Rock Middle School, Jeff and Brett. They listen to me go on and on about what I'm trying to do and help kind of guide my thoughts. I give a lot of thanks to my family. Not only do I have the kids that come up and guest host, they also do some work in the background as far as some of the engineering and helping out with the parody commercials. I suppose if you're listening to this now, you already know how to find the program, but feel free to recommend it to any of your friends that might like it as well. It's available on iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes. So just about anywhere you can find a podcast, you should be able to find The Dark Side. I have recently started a YouTube channel for History on the Dark Side. So if it's easier for you to watch or to listen to the audio on YouTube, you can find me there. And currently under construction, I have a website, historyonthedarkside.com. So hopefully sometime before the end of season two, that is up and running. Thank you once again. I'm so grateful for anybody who takes the time to listen to this. And I will see you next time on The Dark Side.